The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Allegra Hyde. She joins on the telephone in New Hampshire. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
You've got a novel out. It's called Eleutheria. What made you decide to write this? This is a pretty amazing story.
Yeah, I knew that I wanted to write fiction that engaged with the climate crisis, because as a writer, that was a way that I could participate in creating a more sustainable future. So my goal was to write a book that kind of tackled these big issues of, you know, what's happening to our world and how can we fix it, while also writing a kind of entertaining story, a human story that wasn't just kind of facts and figures coming at the reader. So it took a little bit longer than I was anticipating, but I'm really proud of how it turned out.
And our time frame here is around this time, maybe a little bit in the future.
Yeah, it's near future. You know, when I started writing it about 5 years ago, I knew I was writing near future speculative fiction, and then the future kind of caught up to me a little bit while I was writing it. But yeah, I would say now we're kind of, I'm just sort of slightly exaggerated now or slight future.
I hate to use words like dystopian or terms like science fiction. They seem so hackneyed. It's hard to write fiction with the pace and the acceleration of reality around us. You might be familiar with an Oberlin grad named Gary Steingart, who wrote a book called Super Sad True Love Story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, he was rushing to get that book finished because all the stuff he was talking about in it was starting to happen. And he's like, what? I gotta hurry.
Yeah.
did you feel that way? Because I mean, just since your book came out, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling, and in some ways, it's satisfying because you are, you know, if you've spent all this time researching, you know, scientific predictions, historical patterns, and made some guesses at what's on the horizon, to then have that come true, in a way, it can feel good, except when, of course, those occurrences are in some ways disturbing or upsetting. Mm. You know, one of the things that happens in my book is that there are mass mortality events among animal species. And in Boston, for instance, I describe just tons of birds flying from the sky. And recently I saw on Twitter a video of a mass mortality event of birds falling from the sky. It was not in Boston, but it felt like a kind of eerie moment of fiction and reality merging.
Please tell me they weren't starlings.
I don't think they were starlings, but that would be a little too much.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you've alluded a little bit to what the story is about. Your protagonist is a woman named Willa Marks. Set this up for us. What's this all about?
Sure. Well, the book opens with Willa Marks arriving on an island in the Bahamas called Eleutheria, and she's there because she wants to join a group of kind of militant environmentalists who have set up a compound called Camp Hope. And she doesn't know a lot about this compound, but she believes that it is kind of her chance to participate in a movement that will actually make tangible change on climate change. However, when she gets there, It's not quite what she's expecting. The leader is missing. People are wary of her. And she also has a lot of kind of her own challenges and aspects of her past that she hasn't fully reckoned with. So the book kind of goes back and forth between her past and how she's navigating, participating in this eco compound in the Bahamas.
You also give us these very brief visitations to the early history of this island.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up that thread. There's this historical, I would call them historical interludes that kind of appear throughout the book. And that was my effort to kind of contextualize this speculative utopian project with the history of idealism and ultimately exploitation that has played out throughout the Americas, of course, but especially kind of in the Bahamas, and what I find to be a really fascinating way. And so it seemed important to me as a writer to both look into the future, to speak about, the crisis of the future, handling it, but put that in conversation with the past as well, because it's my belief that if we don't really reckon with our history and the patterns that have brought us to this this kind of moment of ecological and social crisis, then we can't actually fix it. So that's why I had that thread running through there.
I didn't Google it. I made a point of not Googling it, but is this really a real place, or did you base this on just historical islands and the pirates of the day and that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in a way, it is and isn't a real place.
Mm.
There is an island called Eleuthera in the Bahamas, and the history that I described in those historical sections is essentially Eleuthera's history.
Oh.
There were Puritans that showed up there. There were pirates and exploitative tourism, military, all were present on this island. The reason why I didn't name my island Eleuthera and I instead called it Eleutheria, one, I wanted to have the freedom to kind of go to a speculative place, to exaggerate, to kind of craft a fictional world that was able to contain everything I wanted to talk about. And also because the original Puritans who arrived in the Bahamas actually originally named the island Eleutheria, and it was eventually shortened. And because those Puritans kind of showed up with this utopian vision, it felt that went awry. It felt really useful and interesting to me to kind of allude back to that initial early vision that they had.
Mm. The book is Eleutheria. Allegra Hyde wrote it. And Allegra, did they really lure people with fires to go into the reef and wreck their ships and then go out and loot them? Did they really do that?
Yeah, and it's pretty shocking because, you're imagining these devout Puritans who have these really high religious ideals. They set up a kind of proto-democracy even, and yet the sort of demands of survival on the island push them to ultimately compromise their ideals in a way that led them to literally lure ships into the reef so that those ships would crash and they could kind of collect all the loot.
Uh-huh.
And that was important to me. It's like a pretty small detail in my novel, but it's a really important touchstone for thinking about, okay, if there was a group of utopian environmentalists in the Bahamas, in what ways might their ideals be compromised? In what ways might kind of their initial utopian goals ultimately fall prey to just the demands of survival and And what can we learn from seeing that play out on the page?
And as a subtext, historically, we have the situation at that time where these colonizers would have been sending ships by there just full of loot that they'd taken from Central and South America. So there was lots of goodies, lots of stolen gold and treasure and all kinds of stuff like that. And there's a little thread in your book about this missing treasure. And this is all kinds of stuff in here. I like the part about her parents. We were talking before we went on the air that you're in New Hampshire. You grew up there. You're visiting family right now. And then I heard that, and it connected with me because this is kind of where Willa came from. And her parents are truly intriguing characters. They're not in the book for very long, but they're fascinating.
Yeah, they're doomsday preppers. And they're out in New Hampshire, basically kind of hiding from the world, hiding from society, rather than facing the challenges of the world. And that the kind of situation that they raise my protagonist in is what in some ways pushes her to later go out into that same world and try to live differently, to try to, instead of hiding from the world, try to find a solution, try to address these problems. And, you know, in a way, the novel takes us through different introduces us to different groups and individuals who are coping with the challenges of our present reality in different ways. You know, doomsday prepping is one way. That's what Willa's parents do. But then she also meets a group of vegan activists who are trying to address hyper-consumerism by living off garbage. And they're kind of another, you know, they have their own small role in the book, but they're just a yet another group that she meets on her way to ultimately heading to the island of Eleutheria and joining those environmentalists.
The Fregans are real. Do you know some of them?
Yeah, I have to confess, I spent some time dumpster diving earlier in my life. And, you know, I of course, in some ways cringe a little bit now, but also I learned a lot from talking to Fregans. And I, you know, it really opened my eyes to how much we do throw away on a daily basis and how kind of broken our systems are that we would have people going hungry and yet also be throwing away so much food, among other things. And I really appreciated the chance to kind of participate and learn about that and then ultimately bring it into this novel.
It's a proud tradition. A number of years ago, I was interviewing Ruth Reichel, the gourmet former New York Times restaurant critic, and she talked about her memories of being a dumpster diver in Berkeley and all the great food that they got early on in her career. And we take it all for granted. We waste so much. We expect when we turn on the faucet that water is going to come out. We expect that our electricity rates are going to be cheap and the electricity is always going to be available. We expect our gasoline to be cheap. It's always going to be available. We expect our weather to be normal. We're so complacent.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to kind of have that expectation. And I think in some ways, more and more people are also realizing as things start to falter, like having our high gas prices right now, that, you know, we can't just kind of continue on business as usual. There are not infinite resources for us to consume. And so we have to find ways to live differently. And it doesn't mean that, you know, these new ways are going to necessarily be worse. They could, in fact, be better, you know. And that's an idea that I tried to reach towards in this novel as well, that living environmentally is not inherently going to be more restrictive. It could mean connecting with your your neighbors more and having local gardens and doing any number of things that will help us continue to inhabit this planet.
You do have a mild message of hope at the end of the story. Let's talk about living the solution, because this is the real centerpiece of the story.
Yeah, there's within the novel, there's a document, there's a fake book, in a sense, that is the catalyst for why Willa ultimately goes to the island of Eleuthera and joins Camp Hope. There's this text that she finds called Living the Solution that outlines basically a plan for radically overhauling society and living differently. And it's she thinks it's written by Camp Hope's leader, Roy Adams. And she really takes this text to heart, really takes it as gospel. I won't reveal too much about it because I don't want to spoil the novel, but I think in some ways the novel then calls into question the sort of utopian vision that text has and kind of complicates it. But it felt important to kind of just in a way, even if that text ends up being in some ways problematic, non-functional, to at least try to envision how a kind of more sustainable future might be achieved. I think oftentimes when writing about environmental catastrophe, it's all kind of like bad news and visions of apocalypse. And in my book, it felt important to actually show people trying and maybe failing, but at least trying to address this crisis and trying in different ways, because I think that's the best we can do at the end of the day.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. My guest in the Book Nook today is Allegra Hyde, her new novel, Eleutheria. And I was afraid, as we meet this reclusive cult leader. I guess I shouldn't call him a cult leader. This guy who's the guru, the main guy who they all admire and the guy who supposedly wrote this book. I was afraid at one point that you were going to turn him into a Jeffrey Epstein for a moment. I mean, you had me worried.
Oh, no.
you know the part I'm talking about where he's out with her and they're alone together and I was getting nervous.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't live up to everything that he's supposedly is this great hero, etc. You know, like all human beings, he's flawed, and in this case, he has deep flaws. The scene that you're talking about was challenging to write in many ways, but it also felt important to show him as a flawed person and really put that into the story, because I don't think that it's a uncommon story in many ways, and it's something that happens in the real world all the time.
You have another major character in here, and I'm gonna be very careful that I don't do any spoilers, but I think that she's so important to the story that we need to talk about Sylvia.
Yeah, so as we kind of come to learn, a big reason that Willa decides to flee the life that she was living in Boston before coming to the Bahamas is because she's kind of been really disappointed by her love interest, Professor Sylvia Gill. And she had really big hopes for kind of Sylvia's ability to enact change as a prominent professor and speaker. And she felt like ultimately Sylvia wasn't kind of blocking her talk, and that really frustrates Willa as a person who wants to enact radical change.
Mm.
And so, in a way, I think Professor Sylvia Gill represents kind of another way of coping with our present reality. She's engaging with it as an academic who's going to maybe think about these issues in an academic way, but is going to remain loyal to an institution and isn't going to rock the boat too much.
Uh-huh.
And so she's kind of yet another person that Willa meets on her journey, and in her case has a really big impact on her in a lot of ways.
Allegra, you are a professor at Oberlin College, and Sylvia is very much an academic. She's a professor at Harvard, and I'm guessing mm-hmm. that over the course of your life that you've met some people who maybe inspired this character a little bit. She's fairly eccentric.
Yeah, I think I would say that all the characters contain a little bit of me and then parts of a lot of other people uh-huh. that I've met over the years. And that's really how I approach my fiction. I try to merge real firsthand experience with research and then also with imagination. So creating a character like Sylvia, she's a composite of a lot of different people and experiences.
All right. So we have this significant environmental message in here, but we also have a love story. We have Willa and Sylvia, and that's a big part of the story. But we keep returning to the environmental message, and it really resonated with me because I think about this all the time. I think about the next generation. What are we leaving for them? I had Bill McKibben on the show again recently, and he was talking about how the baby boomers blew it, how Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House back in the late 1970s, and then the next president, Reagan, tore them off. Carter thought that we could be 40% solar by now if we'd started then. I get this hopeless feeling, and you wrote in the book, you say, if adults wanted children to act as if a future awaited them, then perhaps they ought not to destroy it.
Yeah, I think it is hard to look back and see all those missed opportunities. And it, of course, hindsight's also 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, knowing that we can't change the past, I guess I think about future generations as well. You know, whether they're my own students or kids who are growing up now, and I think we owe it to them to do everything that we can to make sure that they can live and thrive and have their own children on this planet. And I think even when things do seem really depressing, when it seems like there's, you know, it's the problem is so complex, so overwhelming, what I try to remind myself is always that, like, every person has some sphere of influence, has some skill, and we all can contribute in these small ways to creating that bigger future and making sure that future exists. And we may not know how our small actions kind of ultimately affect the a kind of larger movement, but I think that just doing them anyways and not necessarily knowing is kind of an important act of faith, ultimately, that is essential to creating that future.
So we don't have to think that the small apocalypses are leading us to the big one. We can have a hope. We can have a hope that things are going to be okay. And you do have a message of hope at the end of the story, and I like that.
Yeah, you know, the climate crisis, daunting, complicated, but I also think that we have in many ways all the tools that we need to create a better future. We know in many ways what we need to do. It's just a matter of doing it. And so it gives me heart that those tools are there. I'm always really inspired too by youth activists in general, but especially youth activists. And in a way, that's why I kind of really emphasize the power of collective mobilization, but especially the mobilization of young people at the end of the book.
I like reading stories about characters who are likable. And your character, Willa, is so likable. And I think the thing that I like the most about her is she's so different. She's such an innocent in a way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think people have a lot of different reactions to her. Some people find her unlikable, actually, or kind of too flawed. And I think there were times when I was writing this book that I actually felt very frustrated with her because she was doing things that I, as an author, didn't understand. I was like, you know, why are you doing this? This is really foolish.
Nice.
But it felt true to her character. And I think part of the writing process for me was understanding why she does what she does and like what motivates her and how she moves through this world with this kind of relentless kind of belief that a better world is possible and that she can participate in making that true. And sometimes she can be too naive and that gets her into trouble. But sometimes that innocence and naivete and kind of just willful push forward is what's needed to create any change at all.
Well, I must compliment you. I think it's beautifully written. It's a wonderful story. You keep the interest of the reader. You've got nice little twists in here. And I understand you've been getting some buzz. I heard you run one of the late night TV shows, which is pretty cool. And I'm just wondering, I have one more question. What kind of stuff do you like to read?
Well, first off, thank you so much. That is really wonderful to hear, and you know, I'm really grateful to any and all readers and for the press that this book has received. And you know, I love to read a real variety of genres and styles, fiction and nonfiction, and I think that's evident in this book, which brings together, you know, speculative fiction, historical fiction, lots of research, and so I'm all over the map.
The book is Eleutheria, and my guest has been Allegra Hyde. She joined us on the phone today from New Hampshire. And Allegra, I hope you have a really nice summer. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes.